Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with Peter Birch, Music Aviva's Victorian concert manager and opera reviewer in Melbourne for The Australian. Peter, welcome to Joy 94.9.
Paul, it's lovely to be on with you.
Excellent. Now, Peter, you have been reviewing opera for The Australian for many years now. How did you get the role, and for how long have you been doing it?
Well, it's actually 31 years this year.
31!
And what happened was Maria Prerauer, who was the arts editor of The Australian at the time I began, and who had been the first ever full-time arts editor of a newspaper in Australia. So she was a real pioneer, and herself an opera singer. She'd sung Brunhilde at the Garden.
My goodness, at the Covent Garden.
Yeah, yeah. And she called me one day. We knew each other quite well. And she said, John Carger is our opera critic at the moment, and I don't like his writing. And Kenneth Hintz, who writes about our music, not opera, is leaving The Australian to go to The Age, where he was for many years before he retired. And I wondered if you'd be interested in taking over from the two of them as our music reviewer, writing about all music and chamber music and opera. And I said, oh, God, Maria, I've never written a review in my life. I'd be terribly anxious about doing anything like that. And she said, oh, I'm happy to mentor you. I know that you know music well, and it's really just a matter of getting used to the format of writing reviews. And I said, okay, if you're happy to talk to me about every review I write for the first couple of years after I've submitted it, that would be wonderful.
And she said yes.
Yeah, she said, oh, I'd love to.
Heavens.
And she was such a wonderful teacher because she wrote so well herself.
Yes.
She was absolutely honest, so that you knew you weren't dealing with somebody who was going to muck you around. And she taught me the best lesson toward the end of that couple of years. I'd sent up a review, and it was full of long sentences, which is the way I used to write everything. And she called me and said, Peter, I've got the review. Thank you for that. I just want to read a sentence to you and get you to tell me what you mean. And she read this convoluted sentence and said at the end, what do you actually mean? I said, oh, that's easy. And in about five words, said it. And there was this big pause over the phone. And she said, then why didn't you write it? I said, whoop, righto, lesson learned. She was just wonderful. So that's how it happened. And as I say, I've been doing it since 1978, which is unbelievable.
Wow, that is a very long time.
Yeah.
So, Peter, what do you think are the key elements which go towards making for a quality review?
Honesty and honesty.
Honesty.
And honesty.
Honesty every time.
And obviously a very acute understanding of music and the opera. But at the end of the day, a critic's responsibility is to the composer and the composer's integrity. So when I see rubbish like Opera Australia's Cosy that's been on at the moment.
Oh, oh. You didn't like it, Peter.
It just makes my blood boil to think that they could be so contemptuous towards Mozart and Da Ponte.
What did you hate about it?
It would take a lot less time to say what did I like
okay,
about it.
Okay, what did you like about it?
Not much.
No.
The singing was generally okay, and this is the problem. The production was a travesty, and the orchestra, which played well, played under a conductor I thought was utterly inadequate to the role.
Right.
Rather like the orchestra having to play under Sir Richard Armstrong in Aida. They played well. I've never heard a less Italian performance of Aida. And at the end of the day, it's by Verdi.
Oh,
call
yes.
me old-fashioned.
So it should be Italian. You are old-fashioned, Peter. Well, I actually enjoyed the Cosy. I thought it was a lot of fun. But,
Look, I have to say the audience all around me on opening night was clearly delighted.
Yep.
And I was very aware of that. But it struck me that they were being delighted the way an audience at the city square in Riyadh is when there's a beheading.
Oh.
There's a sense of occasion and excitement. And for me, it was Mozart who was being beheaded on stage.
Okay. What are the dangers and pitfalls for a reviewer, especially where a performance has not been of a good standard?
I think for a young reviewer, they're terrified of saying something critical or praiseworthy and it not looking like all the other reviewers have written.
Yeah.
I think that's a very palpable problem. The pitfalls and dangers would, more than anything, have to do with whether or not you knew what you were writing about. If it was a new opera, whether you'd seen the score and had a sense of how it worked. And you've got to understand that if your primary responsibility is protecting the integrity of the composer and the librettist, by implication, your primary responsibility is not to the opera company that's doing it, not to the singers who are singing it, not to the audience. Although there are levels of responsibility, but they're not primary responsibilities.
So it's to the composer and the
So you've got to be fearless,
yeah.
And you've got to know what you're talking about, okay. And you've got to be prepared to defend
yes,
what
you're
you
saying.
Think.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't see that as a danger or a pitfall.
Now, look, Peter, I have asked you to bring in some of your favourite operas, and I think the first one is The Marriage of Figaro, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Which aria or trio or duet have you chosen?
It's a fantastic trio from Act 2 who, on this recording, which is the Sir Georg Scholti recording with the London Philharmonic, Almaviva is played by Thomas Allen, Sir Thomas Allen.
Sir Thomas Allen.
Countess Almaviva, Dame Kirita Kanawa, and Susanna is the late Lucia Popp.
Wow.
The late and much lamented Lucia Popp.
And why do you like this recording so much?
I love the intensity of Scholti's recordings. He wasn't called the Screaming Skull for nothing.
The Screaming
and
Skull? How did he get that name?
Because he screamed all the time at singers when they were rehearsing and recording. But this is a thrilling recording with a near-perfect cast. And this little trio happens at a time when the Count, who's a dreadful philanderer, rushes into his wife's room, thinks she's hiding a lover in the closet.
Which she is, isn't
well,
she?
Well, she's hiding
a man.
Cherubino.
Yes,
who
a man played by a woman.
A mile away from being a lover.
Right.
But she's just embarrassed and finds herself in a dreadfully awkward situation. So he's yelling at her and saying, you know, open the wardrobe. I know there's somebody in there. And she's saying, no, 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 I don't know what you're talking about. Susanna, her maid's with them. And she's all terribly flustered. And so you get this wonderful aggression from him, defensiveness from her, with the most radiantly wonderful top notes that she keeps singing at the end of each verse.
Okay.
And it's glorious.
Well, let's turn it on. This is the Act 2 trio from The Marriage of Figaro. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson. And we just heard the first track selected by my very special guest, Peter Birch. It was Sir Thomas Allen as the Count, Dame Kirita Kanawa as the Countess, and the late Lucia Popp as Susanna, with the Act II trio from Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, conducted by Sir Georg Scholti. Okay, let's hear some more of what Peter had to say. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with Peter Birch, Music Aviva's Victorian Concert Manager and the Opera Reviewer in Melbourne for The Australian. Now, Peter, how much of your own personal views and preferences for a type of music or a style of performance do you allow to influence your judgment?
If the performance is done with integrity in any format, I go there to be thrilled.
Yep.
I don't subscribe to George Bernard Shaw's wonderful description of a critic as being a person who leaves no turn unstoned. And I don't ever think of myself really as a critic. I always think of myself as an appraiser. And if there's anything good to be said about a production, I leap at that opportunity. One of the great problems when you're writing a review is that you don't write the headline for the review. And quite often, the sub-editors who do write the headline can pick up an almost thrown-away comment in the review.
Yes.
And make that the headline. And it skews completely what it is you've been trying to say. And that's always a terrifying thing for me and for any reviewer. I know that because, we all talk about it.
Now, you mentioned the Cosy earlier. Do you think that production lacked integrity?
Utterly.
Utterly.
Yeah.
So when you say it lacked integrity, where do you think they went wrong?
Well, they didn't listen to Mozart and they didn't read Da Ponte. Operas.
Was it the translation into English as well, or is it just the production?
I thought it was a second-rate translation.
Right.
But that really wasn't the problem. It was the production.
Yeah.
And the thing about operas by Mozart is, look, he knows what he's writing.
Yes.
He knows what the libretto is. He works closely with the librettist. And at the end of the day, he comes up with something that one imagines if he was a boy in school, he'd be able to write at the top of the page, my best work. And for somebody to get hold of that and, to my mind, distort it as dreadfully as that was distorted is a disgrace. It shows a contempt for Mozart and for Da Ponte. Now, I'm sure that Jim Sharman would argue vigorously against that, and that's fine. I mean, he's very welcome to. He's not an untalented director. He's a genius director.
Did you see his Death in Venice?
Absolutely. I've seen it three or four times, and it's just one of the supreme productions, I think, that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's in the light of his intelligence and sensitivity in the preparation of operas like that that you then look at Cosy and think, my God, has he lost it, or is he just being smart-assed? How did this happen? And how could the company encourage it to happen?
Do you think they were trying to do something that was fun for a young audience? And, the costumes, for example, the bathing suits, I thought they were great. I really enjoyed them. No. Peter's looking down.
What can I say? Look, at the end of the day, if you go to a Mozart opera, you're going to have to sit through a Mozart opera.
Yeah.
And, you can sit it in Luna Park if you want to. But unless that's going to give more truth to the story than an honest-to-God, straightforward production would, then why would you bother? I mean, there are operas that have had tremendously successful translations of Time and Place.
Yes.
So that famous Jonathan Miller, Rigoletto.
Yes.
Which he set in mafiosi.
Yes.
Italy or New York, I can't think. But essentially, it was instead of the court of the Duke, it was the mafia. And that translated spectacularly into that new format.
Yes.
And made just as much, if not more, sense of the corruption of the court than the original. Mm-hmm. And I was thrilled by that, absolutely thrilled. Mm-hmm. I don't have any particular sense of only liking certain operas. I like opera, full stop.
Yes.
And I love its diversity, and I love the way it can challenge you in a very serious way. Lady Macbeth of Venice, for example.
What did you think
I thought
of
it was
that?
Shatteringly impressive.
Wasn't it fantastic?
Absolutely. The Love of Three Oranges that was done 2 or 3 years ago was wonderful. I like Baroque opera. I like bel canto opera. I like romantic opera.
About modern opera?
Yeah, I like a lot of modern opera. Mm. Again, it can be good or it can be bad.
Mm. What did you think of A Streetcar Named Desire?
I thought it was spectacular. Mm. It was very true to the mood and cadence of the play.
Mm.
And I just thought it was done so beautifully.
It captured the drama of the play so
absolutely.
Well.
I mean, a lot of people have been saying, it's just a night of recitative. So, you've got to tell the
musically
story.
Musically challenging, I think.
Yeah.
But the drama, the story is there intact.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I thought it was a tremendous production, and I thought Yvonne Kenny was brave with a capital B.
Yes.
Taking the role on.
Yes.
And hurling herself into it and having a triumph. I mean, in situations like that, it's only going to be a triumph or a catastrophe.
Yes. Well, and she's talked about it being the most challenging role she's ever taken.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Mm. But I thought she was glorious. Teddy Tahu Rhodes was wonderful. Antoinette Halloran was wonderful. Barry Skelton was wonderful. It was beautifully cast.
It's a good cast, isn't it?
And Tom Woods did a very terrific job in The Pit.
Yes.
Really good. The orchestra clearly loves that score.
Yeah.
And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Okay. Now, realising that a review may have an impact on the box office, what do you think is the responsibility of the reviewer to the reader of the review? I mean, you've talked already about the responsibility is to the composer and the librettist, but what about people out there who may be considering, should I go?
Well, my sense about writing reviews is that after the composer, in a sense, the next most important person to whom you're talking is the reader and the person who may or may not be deciding to spend $200 to $250 on one ticket. I'd have to say, in retrospect, my hope was that after people had read my Cozy review, they put their money away. After they read my Streetcar Named Desire review, they pulled out their money.
Yes, yes.
You know, people have a right to be warned.
Absolutely.
Quite apart from anything else. And one of the things that's interesting as a reviewer is that quite often you'll find yourself, as I did with Aida, surrounded by people, you know, whooping and hollering at the end while you sit there, you know, grinding your teeth. And I always say so. I mean, I always make a point, if my response to the opera isn't the general audience's response, I'll say, you know, they hated it, or I thought it was terrific, or I hated it and they thought it was terrific. You can't, you know, pretend that something that's happened hasn't happened. You've got to be truthful about it.
Do you think opera divides audiences more so than others?
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about it. It'd be dead boring to walk out after every opera and everyone saying, wasn't that just wonderful?
Okay, let's move on to your second choice of music.
The Russian, an imperfect opera with imperfect music, but full of magic. This is the in the first act, and it's when the landowner, has Madame Larina, has her peasants and her workers coming up to the farm because they've completed the crop, and they bring up a decorated sheaf to give her in thanks for her having had them there. And it's just it is the most Russian music. It is absolutely fantastic.
Okay, let's go to Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. You're on The Fool and the Opera.
Thank you.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson. Peter Birch's second music selection was the rousing chorus from the first act of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, a 1975 recording conducted by Sir George Scholti. A wonderful piece, I'm sure you will agree. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with Peter Birch, Victorian Concert Manager for Music Aviva and Melbourne Opera Reviewer for The Australian. Now, Peter, if there's a reasonably long season for a particular work, do you think a second review partway through the season should be provided as well as the one for the opening night?
It's a good question because, as you would know, time and again, the opening night's a long way away from being the best performance that's given.
Yep.
And I always feel a bit ambivalent about attending opening nights and going to a performance which you know is going to be better after another three or four performances.
Yes.
Because all you can talk about is what it is, not what it promises. So I always feel a bit ambivalent about that. That said, opera rarely has long seasons, excepting with Opera Australia, for example, with its musicals, like A Little Night Music.
What did you think of A Little Night Music?
I thought it was ghastly. I just thought Sigrid Thornton, who's a beautiful actress in every sense, was utterly miscast. It was written for Glynis Johns, so written for a singing actress, which is what Sigrid Thornton is. But it was written for somebody whose nature on stage and in every film she ever made that I've seen her in was very whimsical. And I just thought that Sigrid Thornton played it with such a hard edge that when she sang Send in the Clowns eventually, which is one of the saddest, most poignant songs, I mean, you should weep in the famous National Theatre screening with Judi Dench, she cries on stage as she's singing it. Well, you got none of that from Sigrid.
No, it seemed to me that it was actually a bit rushed. You know, it should be slowed down.
Yes, it
really
needs to breathe.
Yes.
I just thought they completely misunderstood the piece.
A pity, an opportunity missed.
Yeah, my word.
Now, Peter, you've been involved in the Melbourne music scene for over 40 years. Is that right? Could that be right? Is that a typo?
No, I'm like Roxy Hart in Chicago. I'm older than I ever intended to be.
And you've seen various opera companies come and go. What do you consider to have been the biggest changes in the standard and the quality of performances and productions over the years?
Well, there are a lot, really. One of the really important things that happened in the past 20, 30 years has been the existence of the Elizabethan Melbourne Orchestra, now Orchestra Victoria. It just raised, because it's full-time and professional, it raised the standard of accompaniment to a level that we had never heard before. And it's really one of the jewels in Melbourne's musical crown. And I think the good thing is that audiences really understand that. They know how good it is. And even with, you know, I think second-rate conductors like Richard Armstrong and the guy who did the Kersey Cuneo, they still played well, they just weren't being well directed. But when they get a good conductor, they really deliver.
As in Tom Woods in Streetcar.
Absolutely. So that's certainly a very big thing. Another of the things that's obviously happened in the last 20 or so years is that with the availability of the State Theatre, we have an absolutely first-class venue. I remember going into it just after it opened with Lillian Whiteman, who was this amazing couturier who had Le Louvre in Collins Street.
Is she still around?
No, I hope not. They buried her. And she was wonderfully grand. And we went into the theatre, and she sat down and looked around and said, "Oh, my God, it's like sitting inside a giant kidney." And of course, I never go into it now without thinking of Lil saying that.
And it's been opened, I think, about 25 years ago, so it's holding up pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
It's great having that.
It is the best theatre in Australia, isn't it? Would you agree with that comment?
Yeah, I haven't been in a better opera theatre, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things that's been said about Opera Australia in recent years is that that sense of community and family and camaraderie, which it had at its pinnacle, which I think was maybe 15, 20 years ago under Moffat Oxenbould, has deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you welcome
get that sense of community.
Do you welcome the appointment of Lyndon Terracini as the artistic director?
Very much. I think Lyndon was an inspired choice, really inspired choice. He's a singer himself. He's an administrator. I mean, he knows the whole gamut of performance. And I think he will bring a wonderful, fresh eye to what's happening. And I think it will see itself undergo an absolutely wonderful revival and a reawakening of interest in the broader community.
I'm very pleased to hear you say that, Peter. Okay, let's go to your third music choice. Now, this is La Bohème. What have you selected from La Bohème? And who have we got singing?
The parts I love most in La Bohème are when Mimi sings pensively and rips your guts out. It's so touching. She does it as she's singing They Call Me Mimi, right towards the end, where she just stops describing herself, and there's this amazingly touching moment. And in Act 3, when she's overheard them saying, no, she's dying, she's had it, and she does this fantastic aria, which is what we're going to hear now, just to make us all cry.
And who is our Mimi?
This is the absolutely impeccable Mirella Fraini with Herbert von Karajan and the Berlin Philharmonic. Fraini is just one of the greatest singers of her generation. And a friend of mine was the first concertmaster of the Vienna Philharmonic. And he made a lot of recordings with Karajan and her. And he said it was miraculous to go into the control room after they'd done a take. And Karajan would just sit there listening to the take as it was played back, and saying, you need to do that, hold that back, push that forward, do this, do that. He'd give 1,000 instructions. They'd go straight out, re-record it, and everything he said came out in her performance.
Fantastic.
No notes, no nothing. She heard it, she understood it.
Brilliant. Okay, let's hear Mirella Fraini as Mimi. You're on The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with Peter Birch, who is the Melbourne Opera Reviewer for the Australian newspaper, and he's also the Victorian Concert Manager for Music Aviva. Now, Peter, we've mentioned Opera Australia, but do you think that Melbourne is well served for opera, given that Opera Australia visits twice a year? We've got Victorian Opera up and running, and there's also Melbourne Opera and a few other smaller companies. Do you think we're well served?
Well, there's a lot of opera happening. There's not a lot of top-level opera happening. So if what you're talking about is the amount of opera, yes, we're well served. If what you're talking about is performances that you would give a year of your life to hear, you're going to live a long while.
You've travelled widely overseas. How do you think Opera Australia compares with, say, some of the more renowned places like, say, Covent Garden or the Met or Vienna Staatsoper?
Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah.
At its best, it's absolutely up there with them.
Yeah.
And that's what's so irritating when they don't do it, because you know they can, and they fluff it. They don't do it. And it makes me furious.
And do you think it's lack of resources, or is it wrong? Are they selecting wrong directors, or where do you think they're going wrong?
Well, casting's obviously always a problem. And who can afford the stellar singers? I can remember 25 years ago, I was in Germany as a guest of the then West German government. And at that stage, Carreras was at the pinnacle of his career. And I think we were told he was seeking a performance fee of 40,000 US tax-free a performance.
Wow.
A long time ago. Mm. And the major houses, the six major houses in Germany, got together and said, we are not going to hire this man. We refuse to pay that fee.
Yeah.
It's usurious. And so they didn't.
Mm.
Mm. I guess one of the things that it's always terrific to do is, such as the opera did with, Australian opera, did with people like Leona Mitchell, you know, terrific singer. And they brought her out quite regularly, and she had the opportunity of, in a sense, preparing performances of repertoire she didn't otherwise have. And so we got to hear her absolutely fresh in those roles and growing in those roles and characterizations and singing like an angel. And then she'd go off and sing him at the Met or the Garden or wherever. And that was always a great treat. And there are wonderful singers who've come up through Opera Australia and the Australian Opera. John Wegner, who sang with the Melbourne Symphony recently, he did Wotan's Farewell. A staggering voice. You know, there was this orchestra making a huge sound, and he just cut through them like a hot knife through butter. It was thrilling to hear. And, I mean, at the end of it, you just wish to God you were hearing the whole of Die Walküre, really, rather than just one, you know, aria or one scene. So it's not as though we don't have good singers around. Yvonne Kenny,
yes.
Terrific singer.
Yes.
People like Emma Matthews. To have watched her grow from being little Emma Lysons from Perth to being a startlingly impressive singer.
And she's making her Covent Garden debut next year.
Yeah, well, lucky them.
Yes, yes, I agree.
And I think that recording she made in Monte Carlo is just spectacular.
Yes, I actually played a track from that on last week's show. That was Ophelia's Mad Scene.
Ah, yes. Mm. My favourite track on that is Calvin Bowman's song, Touch the Air Softly.
Well, I think I might have to play that in the new year.
It is just beautiful. Mm.
Thank you.
Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you for that tip, Peter.
A Melbourne composer.
Yes.
Living in the Dandenongs.
Now, Peter, are there particular opera composers or works in the operatic repertoire which rarely, if ever, get an outing that you'd like to see performed?
That's a broad response, no, really. Mm-hmm. I don't have much of a sense at all that there are unjustly neglected operas lying there waiting to be found. It happens every now and then, and it's thrilling when it does. And it's good to hear them, and then to decide whether you ever want to hear them again. But it's my sense that most of the things that aren't regularly performed are justifiably neglected. When I was in Germany, as I was saying to you before, they were saying that there had been a list done about, 60 or 70 years earlier of the 10 most performed operas in Germany at that time. And they'd done a list quite recently before we were there in Germany, meeting all these opera house intendants. And essentially the list was the same. There'd been some juxtaposition of placement, but it was Carmen and it was Bohème and it was, Aida and Traviata, Trattoria, Figaro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very predictable.
Yeah.
And the reality is great operas are great operas.
Absolutely.
Forever.
Absolutely. Yes, forever and ever. All right, let's go to your fourth track. It's Verdi's Don Carlo. Which track have you selected here, Peter?
This is a duet that comes very early in the first act. And on this recording, it's sung by Jose Carreras when he had a voice, recorded in 1978, so a long time ago, 31 years
ago. About the same time you started doing opera reviews for The Australian.
It was. In fact, that year, he must have known. And the person with whom he's singing the duet is Piero Cappuccilli, baritone, and it's a thrilling recording of Don Carlo with the chorus of the Deutsches Oper Berlin, the Berlin Philharmonic again and von Karajan again. And it's wildly atmospheric, and the singing, you know, the solo work and duet work of the two of them is absolutely wonderful.
Fabulous. Okay, let's hear the Act One duet from Verdi's Don Carlo. You're on The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with Peter Birch, Victorian Concert Manager for Music Aviva and the Melbourne Opera Reviewer for The Australian. Wow, Peter, that was pretty good. Verdi's Don Carlo.
It's a stunner, isn't it?
Yeah, fabulous stuff. Now, final question, or close to the final question, What has been the best performances that you can remember seeing here in Melbourne over the years? And tell me a little bit about those performances. Oh,
they go back a long way, really. Seeing Murray Collier and Tito Gobbi in Tosca.
What year are we talking?
Oh, we'd have to be talking 30 years ago or more. They were amazing. He was the great Scarpia of his day all over the world. And here he was in Melbourne at the Princess Theatre with Murray Collier, who'd had, you know, at that stage herself, a great international career, and they clearly knew each other and performed fabulously together. And it was a startling performance, absolutely startling. Other things that have been thrilling was the Meistersinger.
Mm-hmm.
That I think we borrowed from the Hamburg Opera or from a German company.
And that was Bruce Martin sang Hans Sachs?
Yes.
Yes. I believe there was a standing ovation for at least one of the performances here in Melbourne, which is very rare indeed.
Yes. Well, it was an incredibly beautiful production. And then Simone Young did it. When she was with the company, I saw it in Sydney. I don't think it came to Melbourne.
No.
But again, it was absolutely beautiful. The Lady Macbeth of Dance we were talking about, I think that's one of the best things I've ever seen OA do, as was the Otello of two or three years ago.
Yes, with the Jonathan Summers as Iago.
Yeah. It's. I just think that's Verdi's masterpiece. I mean, for me it is.
Yeah.
Its distillation of Othello, holding together all the things that are staggeringly wonderful about the play and then heightening them so brilliantly with the music. And then the staging by Harry Kupfer was absolutely crazy.
Those stairs.
With a bomb and drop through them. It was an incredible production. I know a lot of people hated it. But I thought it was, you know, a leap of the imagination in the best sense. And one of the things I've seen this year, which is one of the most surprising performances I've ever seen in my life, was when the Heidelberg Choral Society in the Preston Town Hall did Turandot.
Really?
With Matthew Toogood conducting, who's a very young conductor.
And who was Turandot?
Maggie Haggett, Margaret Haggett.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
She had a bit of a cold, although you'd never have known. She hit those notes like the bullseye. She was startling. And there was a terrific cast around her. Matthew had obviously done a lot of preparation. The chorus was terrific. There was a children's chorus. And it was just... I mean, it was one of those things you went to... I went to thinking, I'm going here because I want to see Maggie, because I adore her. And I'd never seen Matthew Toogood before, but I'd heard good things about him, and so I was interested to see what he'd be like. And the whole audience just sat there with their mouths agape, thinking, my God, you know, because I think it was getting two or three performances, And I went to the first, and then I had to go interstate. Otherwise, I would have gone again to the last one.
I mean, Turandot's one of those operas that if it's done well, it really works,
yeah,
doesn't it? It really
I mean, it's clearly done in concert.
Yeah.
But they'd chosen the cast well, and Maggie was just dazzling, absolutely dazzling. And then Matthew Toogood conducted the last of the performances at the Athenaeum of Melbourne Opera.
Of Tosca?
Of Tosca, a little while ago.
Was that the night Antoinette Halloran sang? Did she sing? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was terrific.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrific. Yep. And he's off to Germany. He's young.
Fabulous.
And he's straight off to Germany to learn his craft.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think he'll come back a very, very successful conductor.
Good to hear. We need more young conductors,
absolutely,
don't we? We do.
That's just a few. I mean, I'm sure if I sat down and thought about it for a week, there'd be an awful lot more.
Well, I think that's pretty good. We've covered quite a lot of ground in this interview, so I think we might wrap it up. We'll go to your final music choice, which is Der Rosenkavalier by Richard Strauss.
Yes, my favourite opera.
Why is it your favourite opera?
Because it's perfect. I think. I mean, it's certainly perfect for me. And this recording, again with Sir Georg Scholti, I said to you before, it's not by any choice that everything seems to be Scholti and Karajan, but I'm sorry, they happen to be very good conductors. And this is a very, very famous recording with the Vienna Philharmonic and Regine Crespin, Yvonne Minton as Octavian, and Helen Donath as Sophie. And this is the great trio from the final act and final scene of the opera.
Okay, let's go.
Strauss's love affair with the female voice gone mad.
The final of the Act 3 trio from Der Rosenkavalier, You're on the Fall, and the opera. Wow, Peter, that was fabulous.
Enough to make you believe in God.
Absolutely. That was the Act 3 trio from Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier. We heard the voices of Regine Crespin, Yvonne Minton and Helen Donath. Peter Birch, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your insights into opera with me. It's been
a
real pleasure.
It's been a joy to be here with you. Thanks for the chance of proselytizing.
Well, and I'm hoping that you might agree to come back in maybe about 12 months' time and we could do it all again.
If I'm alive, then I'd love to.
Peter Birch, thank you very much. You're on The Fall and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert. Thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.